Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome. It's time for yet another scintillating edition of Wiley and Sage's Love, Lust, and Laughter. And today, your faithful sidekick, Bill Sage, is here to introduce special guest Dr. Janice Epp, a fourth-generation native San Francisco. That means she's won the World Series a whole bunch of times, I think, but at least the World Series of getting people out of sexual pain and discomfort, because she is a practicing sexologist, clinically speaking, and she teaches human sexuality, and she's been a friend of Dr. Diana's for a long time. So without further ado, because I don't, I will, and here I am doing it with Dr. Diana.
Thank you, Billy Sage. Yes, I'm here. Actually, I'm here almost like a radio studio, because Dr. Janice Epp and I are in my hotel room, me on line one, Janice on line two. So we are at the Quad S conference. Janice, say what Quad S stands for. I guess
Society for the Scientific Study of Sexuality. It's an international research organization devoted to sexuality.
That's it. So Janice and I have known each other since about 1990. Billy's right, a long time. And Janice is a sexuality educator as well as being in private practice. Her last name, for those of you making notes, is Epp, and that's E as in elephant, P as in Peter, P as in Peter. That's what she likes to say.
Very short. People want to make it complex.
Any relation, by the way, to famous bongoist Preston Epp?
Oh, gosh.
Bongo Boogie,
no
Bongo
idea.
Rock from the 50s? Just
wow.
Checking.
That's a little possibly before my time, but hey, I'll claim it.
All right. Okay.
Well, Janice, you said there is another Janice Epp who's Canadian.
Mm-hmm, who makes films about Eskimos. And I know I've gotten some emails for her, and I have no idea if she's gotten any of mine, but if she has, she must be very interested.
The best thing about Eskimos that I like is that they call sex laughing time.
Laughing time. I like that. That's nice.
That's good. So let's talk, Janice, about your work. Let's start with the Institute for the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality, because you've been a professor there for a long time. Would you tell us about what you do there and the kinds of people you graduate from the Institute?
Sure. The Institute is a private graduate school in San Francisco, and it is the only school of its kind in the country that deals exclusively with sexology, that is, the scientific study of sex. And mostly mid-career professionals from the helping professionals go there, people like physicians or therapists or nurses or health educators, sociologists, social workers, et cetera. They come to the Institute specifically for graduate training in human sexuality in concepts and methods of sex therapy and sex education or research. And so I work with a really great group of 30 or 40 graduate students each year and do training with them and sit on their dissertation committees and all that boring academic stuff. But it's fun for those of us who are interested in sex.
And it's so, therefore, it's not so boring.
No, it's not boring to us.
Have you ever been propositioned somebody saying, hey, would you like to have some boring academic sex? And you say, I find that interesting.
Actually, no. And, you know, once every so often somebody asks me that question, I think, you know, nobody's ever propositioned me. What am I, chopped liver?
Would you like some chopped liver sex?
Chopped liver sex. So, and then Dr. Janice also teaches at Skyline College, which is in San Bruno, because Janice, well, she lives in Palo Alto, where I used to live. Mm-hmm. And so we know each other from that standpoint, too. But San Bruno is north of Palo Alto.
Right.
And Skyline Community College. And you were telling me earlier, Janice, about your human sexuality class there. And tell us more about it, because I liked what you said.
Yeah, my wonderful students, 18, 19, 20-year-olds from a real diversity of cultures, a lot of kids from the Philippines and China and Central and South America. And they come here, essentially a lot of them out of cultures where they've had no information about sex at all. And it's we were saying earlier, for some of them, it's like opening a door to a whole new world in terms of how they can feel a lot better about themselves and get accurate information and go out into the world and begin to function as adults rather than children.
You were saying to me, just as one example, that one man worried because his penis was leaking.
Yes, yes. And he had absolutely no idea that there was going to be any function of his penis other than urination. And he was convinced that he needed medical help. And in 5 minutes, I was able to make his life so much better. It was so easy. And I said to myself, how sad is it that people have no information, and with just a little bit, that we can change their lives.
Which is a good lead-in to the other thing that Janice does, which is if you, listening audience, have any questions, she is the only non-MD on MedHelp.org. And so Janice is, of course, a PhD, but so she has a real international audience there, too, asking questions at medhelp.org. And you were saying that a lot of MDs, they're mostly MDs on this site.
Right.
And they really, so many don't know about human sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a lot of really good information on the site, obviously, and it's primarily medical. But they, in their infinite wisdom, the proprietors of the site a year and a half ago asked me if I would be willing to do a forum on sexuality and relationship issues. And so I answer people's questions from all over the world. And they frequently, again, don't know about their own anatomy and physiology or convinced that there's something wrong when there really isn't. And so for them to be able to get answers from somebody who specifically is trained in human sexuality and really understands it from a broad perspective, not just a medical perspective, I've been able to help a lot of people that way.
And you also talked about so many MDs need to get beyond the performance model.
Right, right, because a lot of what happens, particularly for men, is they only get the plumbing model of sex. They get told that, you know, the penis is like a hydraulic system and it just has to perform, and that's it. And of course, for a lot of men, especially when they get to be a certain age, when they're no longer teenagers, if they look at sex as performance, then they begin to not enjoy it as much and wonder why they're not fulfilled. And I always say it's like if you go out to dinner and all you think about is, well, how am I going to look when I'm eating the salad? Or how am I going to look when I'm eating the main course? And if you focus on the performance of the meal rather than your enjoyment of the meal, you're not going to enjoy the meal at all.
Perfect metaphor. Just perfect. And you also talk, I want to go back to your class at Skyline because I was reading an international poll that estimated that 20% of adults have experimented with masks and blindfolds and other bondage gear, and 35% have experimented with anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that's probably low. Talk about your younger students.
Yeah, I think it's low because, well, of course, for the older generation, people who grew up thinking that there was only one proper way to have sex, for them, it's definitely more difficult to conceive of stepping outside of the little narrow box of human sexuality that they conceive of. But for my 18 and 19-year-olds, they've already gone beyond that, and they see the richness and variety of human sexuality. They've had access to materials, and they've had access to shops where they can go and find toys and enhancements that aren't sleazy, where everybody's comfortable and they're staffed with educators. I mean, we're lucky in the Bay Area. We have a lot of those shops.
Including Carol Queen staffing Good Vibrations.
Right, absolutely. Good Vibrations is, that's where I say, and everybody go to Good Vibrations because you can be comfortable there, and it's treated just like anything else, you know.
That's
like shopping for lettuce.
That's right, shopping
was
for
that
lettuce.
Romaine or iceberg?
Well, let's say arugula.
Oh, arugula.
Oh,
fancy.
Okay. We'll have some baby spice greens, please.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, if you want to call in for some baby spice or whatever your favorite salad green is, our studio line toll-free is 1-888-874-4888. That's 1-888-874-4888.
And I'm going to also, and Billy, if you could write this down because and give it later in the show, Dr. Janice Epps' website is, we're going to spell it.
All righty.
D-R-J, so Dr. J, Janice, S-S-E-X, so two S's, E-X, facts. F-A-C-T-S, facts, F as in Frank.
Okay.
At blogs, B-L-O-G-S.
Is that an email site or a website? You put
a,
usually
it's a website. It's actually a blog site.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's at blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
So B-L-O-G.
At blogspot or dot blogspot?
It's Dr. J's sex facts at blogspot.com.
Okay.
So two S's in the middle there, blog, spot.
It occurred to me I could simplify it one of these days. It made sense when I wrote it out and started the blog, and now every time I say it, I think, oh, God, that's complex, isn't it?
So does Dr. J get many calls about basketball sexology?
Yeah. Well, I always say, Dr. J is my nickname, and I may not be as tall as him, but I probably have scored as many points, shall we say.
Whoa, here comes a free throw. Okay.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to share, going back to something we were talking about before, about urologists treating the penis and performance and plumbing. I so well remember in 1994 going to Singapore for the World Congress on Impotence, still called Impotence. And, of course, for those of you listening, we a long time ago tried to move away from impotence to ED or erectile dysfunction because impotence applies helplessness and that it's like, for instance, I also prefer using pre-orgasmic for women rather than anorgasmic because it has a little element of hopefulness and optimism in it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I went to this conference in Singapore, 400 urologists from all around the world, mostly male, 99%, and myself, the only sex therapist there, and another sex therapist from Italy, woman. And these doctors were all talking about putting the lead back in the pencil, all this plumbing stuff, not a note of dealing with a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or a man's sense of his own self and his own body and his own sense of his sexuality, but just the penis is plumbing and hydraulics. And we know, as sexologists, that that's just, that model doesn't work at all. And in fact, I try to change people's attitudes about their bodies by using language. As you said, language is so powerful. It both, language affects attitudes and attitudes affect language.
Mm.
So if we use terms like impotence, which if you look it up in the dictionary, it means powerless. So essentially, if we say a man is impotent, what we're saying is if you ever once couldn't get it up after, you know, 5 minutes in the missionary position in the dark, after a fight with your partner and six beers, you have this horrible disease. Well, there's no such thing. So what I say to men is if somebody says that to me, I say, well, tell me a little bit about what that means to you. And I use the term erection concerns.
Oh, I like that.
Because everybody's had a concern about sex. If you ever once didn't get laid when you wanted to, you've had a concern, right? So we all have. And there's no us versus them. We're not healthy and they're sick. It's everybody has sexual concerns. And so when you phrase it that way, people begin to see themselves as healthy rather than sick. And there's so many different kinds of sexual concerns and erection concerns. I mean, it could be, you know, guys think if they, as I said, if they ever once didn't have an erection when they thought they should, that they have this disease. And then they worry themselves into
in fact, further ED.
Yes, yes. So it's mostly stress and anxiety. And so then as clinicians, of course, our job is to help them figure out what it is that's causing them the stress and anxiety. And a lot of times it's just that they're now worried so much that they've created this reality for themselves.
And you, being in Palo Alto, the center of Silicon Valley, you have a lot of, in your private practice, a lot of high-achieving couples Right. And you were talking about that earlier. Just elaborate on that, would you please?
Yeah, I have these couples who come to me, and they say, we're not having sex anymore. What's wrong? And I find out they're working 14, 16-hour days. And sex is no longer a priority for them, and they've compartmentalized themselves, their lives. They expect to work 16 hours, grab a quick bite to eat, come home, and then schedule, you know, 20 minutes together. And why don't we have any desire? Why isn't sex just automatically happening? So this, again, and that's a performance model of sex, again, which is perform, perform, perform at your job, and then come home and perform as well. And we know that doesn't work.
And I talk about two syndromes in this regard, the DINS syndrome, double income, no sex, and the TTFS syndrome, too tired for sex.
Too tired for sex, absolutely. If you're working 12, 14 hours a day, and that's the most important thing in your life, and that has priority, you're exhausted, both mentally and physically.
And so it's very important for these high-achieving couples to schedule not only date nights, which is very hard for some of them, but to get away at least once every 3 months without children, if there are children in the home.
Yeah, I usually try to get them to commit to getting away once a month because the high achievers, they've got the income to do it.
Right.
And, you know, and they say, well, we've got kids or whatever. And I say, either if you have relatives, leave them with the relatives or hire someone. And it's like, oh, hire someone? Leave my child with someone? And I say, are you going to spend the rest of your life with your children in your bed? Because if you are, then you're not going to have any sex life. So forget it, you know, until they're 18 and they leave. So you've got to figure that you've got to prioritize sex just like you prioritize everything else.
And actually, a couple that prioritizes sex and they're affectionate in front of their children produce happier children.
Oh, absolutely.
Remember what Dr. William Master said, that the best sex education for your kid is mommy's cooking in front of the stove and dad comes up, puts his arms around her, pats her butt. That's good sex education.
Absolutely, it is. And people say to me all the time, what should we say to our kids about sex? And I say, well, it doesn't really matter what you say. It's your attitudes and what you're modeling. It's your body language. It's whether you touch each other. It's how you approach your own body and your child's body, too. And if you model a comfort with your body and a comfort with affection, then your kids are going to get the idea that's a good thing. And they're going to integrate that as they grow up and as they look at that, as they integrate their own sexuality.
And they'll be much better adult partners.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be affectionate and to be demonstrative. And the other thing that I see all the time, I'm sure you too, you do as well, Dr. Janice Epp, is that couples that have just been totally invested in the children, the kids leave home, they look at each other, what are we going to talk about? And, you know, the empty nest will not become the love nest because they haven't been loving each other before.
Yeah, and that's also the result of, and it happens mostly to women, is that women take on the role of mother because they have to, but they become enveloped with that role, and they really lose their sense of themselves as a person and as a sexual being the way that they were before they became a mom. And so they're like mom 24 hours a day. And you can't just turn that off and reclaim being somebody else if you're a stranger to that person after 20 years. It just doesn't happen. So people really need a lot of help with that. And I talk to women all the time about, you're not just a mom. You know, and that's what feminism is all about, is giving women the options to be somebody else as well, to still be their sexy self and to still be interested in the rest of the world rather than just live through their children. I mean, that's the worst thing you can do for yourself and your kids.
And your kids, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it is hard for mothers to do that, to turn it off. And I think particularly women who have come out of very dysfunctional families where there was not secure attachment with their own mother.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so then some of these, if they were anxiously attached, then with their own child, they become the helicopter mother, the hovering, the overprotective mother.
Mm-hmm. And I think also women these days are getting that message from the media, too, and from, you know, the 24-hour-day bombardment of somebody's going to kidnap your kid or this or that. Mm. And people are just so frightened now, and they're convinced that they have to be in their child's face 24 hours a day. And this is, you know, we know, and the FBI statistics bear out that most everything really traumatic and bad that happens to kids doesn't happen from strangers. It happens from people within the family system or the friends. But people are convinced that there's that, you know, lurking stranger out there that's going to kidnap their kid. And so everybody's over-supervised. Have you noticed that? I mean, at Halloween the other night, I got 8 kids, and I live on a block with tons of kids. People aren't letting their kids trick-or-treat. And I'm in a nice neighborhood in Palo Alto. It's safe. And every single kid who came, including the 14- and 15-year-olds, the parents are lurking in the background. And, I mean, I remember when I was growing up, once I was 5 or 6, we trick-or-treated on our own.
I know, me too, all around the Hollywood Hills.
Of course. And, I was in San Francisco, but same thing. And now people are just absolutely paranoid and obsessed. And these poor kids are missing out on a lot of fun. And their own ability to take care of themselves and to learn how to take care of themselves, too.
That is very true. Billy, I think you wanted to comment there.
Well, let's see. I just was remembering when you were mentioning about the trick-or-treating around the neighborhood here. I live in a beautiful neighborhood with a house right on the corner, a full-on mm-hmm. house, not an apartment, and it's the whole neighborhood. I was waiting. I got tons of candy. Now I'm amping out on sugar from used candy. I had four trick-or-treaters. That was it.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
And hovering in the background, too. It's like,
yeah.
Guys, live a little bit.
Yeah, let your kids learn. I mean, kids are not going to evolve socially. They're not going to learn the developmental tasks that every child needs if the parents are doing everything for them.
Well, and then if the parents are doing everything for them, many of these children, and we see it, somebody did a big study of this, some of these young people are very narcissistic. They've got this sense of entitlement mm-hmm. because they feel like they deserve it. Everything's coming to them, being handed to them. They haven't been able to be independent enough.
Somebody said that's also one of the most dangerous pathologies in China, which is now, ironically, the world's most populous nation with the one child per family policy, and most families prefer male children. So you've got all these cosseted little narcissistic princes who feel they're entitled to rule the world in a sort of a fascistic, pretty much a fascistic state, which is becoming the world's most powerful. One Chinese guy was joking that we're the world's best lovers. Why do you say that? Because there's more of us than anybody else. I said, or
and,
the
you
world's
know,
dumbest because they don't know it any better. But who knows? It's just one
I get a lot of those kids in my class at Skyline. I get the princes. And it's
the guy you were
disparity.
Talking about was worried about a leaky penis. Was he from the PRC?
Yes. No, he was from Pakistan.
Oh, okay.
And that's very common in India and Pakistan as well, because there's no sex education there. In fact, there's very little health education at all, especially rurally. But everybody's got a computer now. So, we're changing it one person at a time, but as people get more access to computers, they are getting more information. But I wanted to go back to what you said, Bill, because I get these kids from, for instance, from China, where there is an incredible disparity between the way the boys have been raised and the girls still. And the boys are, as you said, the little princes. And the girls, believe it or not, in this day and age, 19- and 20-year-old girls living at home, the boys, by the time they're 15, are autonomous. They can do whatever they want. The girls are expected to stay home and cook and clean, and they're not even allowed to watch television unsupervised. And they tell me, and I never knew this till I started teaching at Skyline, when even a kissing scene comes on TV, their parents put their hands in front of their eyes so that they can't see it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so these girls are completely and utterly unprepared to face life as adults. They're completely and utterly unprepared. So needless to say, I have a lot to say about that. and working with them, and I find that with the 18 and 19-year-old girls, the first thing I have to do is give them a sense of themselves as people, as autonomous beings, that they're worthwhile, that they have a right to being sexual, that they have a right to information, and that they have just as much right to autonomy as the boys.
Yeah.
And I've probably upset the balance of power in a lot of families over the years.
I was going to say, years ago I had a Japanese friend on the peninsula there.
Mm-hmm.
She came from Japan to go to school, to go to college in somewhere in the Bay Area. And she didn't want to go back to Japan.
Yeah, because she would have to give up her autonomy, probably.
And this was the first time that she really had autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like 30 years ago now. But so she married an American and stayed.
Yeah, it's very common. And a lot of these girls, as I said, the boys are autonomous. They learn about condoms. Usually like a cousin or an uncle will give them, sexy magazines or whatever, or videos, and they get to watch them, and then they get condoms. Nobody tells them anything about sex, but they're told, don't get a girl pregnant, so they all get condoms, whereas the girls get nothing, absolutely nothing. They don't even know they have a vulva, and that's their first lesson, is learning that they have, that they're more than just a walking vagina. Because if you ask most kids, you say to people, all right, what do you teach your kids? Well, they say, boys have a penis and girls have a vagina. Well, no. The vagina is not analogous to the penis. The vulva is analogous.
Yeah, say more about that in the clitoris.
Yeah, well, and then that's the reproductive model of sex, the idea that sex is all about reproduction and that women are just a walking vagina, as I say, rather than a vulva, which contains their clitoris, which is
or
the center
of all,
sexual pleasure.
Or worst of all, in so many of the cultures, especially
but they don't
like
know that.
Like the sort of like the cultures in northern Pakistan, where the woman is regarded as a soulless vessel to please men, period. It's like,
yes,
and that's
absolutely
the cultural ethos. And if you disagree and you're a female, they will kill you or they will maim you.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, we still have women getting acid thrown in their faces, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's very scary. So we're going to go to the break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about something. Janice App is so good about talking about many, many things, anything. But the resistance factor, you want to hear about the resistance factor.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Oh, okay. However, if you disagree, call 1-888-874-4888. That's our studio toll-free line. We'll be back after this break. This is Wiley and Sage on the Progressive Radio Network.
Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
Hello, I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and you can hear my program, If You Love This Planet, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Sunday at 3 p.m. Please join me as I interview a huge variety of special guests from around the world about a range of topics, including the health of the planet and prescriptions for survival. So, if you do love this planet, tune in to the Progressive Radio Network every Sunday at 3 p.m.
This is John Rappaport inviting you to my new radio show on the Progressive Radio Network, which will air every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm an investigative reporter. I've spent 20 years researching health and medical fraud, deep politics. I'll have lots of very knowledgeable guests on the show who have information to share with you so that you can live a more healthy and informed life. Join me every Wednesday on PRN, that's 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the John Rappaport Show. See you then.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And we are back on Wiley and Sage, Love, Lust, and Laughter with our special guest, Dr. Janice Epp. Our studio line toll-free is 1-888-874-4888. That's 1-888-874-4888. Got a question? Call in.
Yes, please do. We love to hear from you, dear listening audience. I realize that many of you don't hear the show live, though, so you can't call in. You wait and wait until it's archived by the following Monday, and then you download it. And walk around with your iPod listening to the show or whatever. Anyway, I'm so pleased to be here with my friend and colleague, Janice Epp, and we are, again, at the Quad S Conference, the annual conference in Las Vegas, so we get to look at each other, and we like to talk to each other anyway, but now we're on PRN together. And Janice, in her work, in her private practice, because as we said in the first half of the show, she does a lot of teaching. She's a professor at the Institute for the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality and also a teacher at Skyline College. And so you talk, Janice, about the R factor, which means the resistance factor. I think it's fascinating. Would you explain how you see this? And how you work with it?
Well, the resistance factor simply says that if you put a barrier between someone and something, it makes it that much more attractive. Forbidden. We've all seen what happens. If you tell a kid, don't stick a bean in your ear, what's the first thing the kid's going to do? Stick a bean in their ear, even if they never thought about it, right? If you say, you can never eat Brussels sprouts, don't you touch those Brussels sprouts, that's the way to make Brussels sprouts really attractive, right? You can't have it.
Reverse psychology.
Yes, right. Well, anyway, so if there's a barrier or if something is forbidden, then it's more attractive. It's like, as I said, if you're at a, if you were at a naturist resort where everybody was nude and somebody got some kind of injury and had to have part of their shoulder covered up, after a few days, what would everybody be looking at and wanting to see? What's under that? What's under the bandage? And that shoulder would be really sexy. And a lot of cultures do this. We create these resistances in order to make things more attractive. The example I can think of is the more you cover somebody up, the more, in a lot of cultures, they never see people nude. And so naked bodies are like incredibly hot. And the more you don't see them, the more hot they are. So what happens in long-term relationships a lot of times is we take the R factor out. In our rush to become intimate, we meet somebody, we move in together, and then what do we want to do? We want to learn everything about each other as soon as we can. So we stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning talking, telling all our secrets, and well, what did you do when you were 5, and how did you feel about this, and blah-da-da-blah-da-da-blah. And after a year or two, you know everything about the other person. What's left? Where's the mystery? Where's the excitement? Where's the R factor? Instead of two individuals, you've got Tweedledum and Tweedledee at Disney World in the matching T-shirts or whatever. And people wonder why they're not sexy to each other anymore. So I call it keeping the bathroom door closed. And that is simply that when you move in with somebody, don't create a roommate. You need to retain some mystery. You need to retain some strangeness, if you will, and some separateness. a relationship in which people are interested in each other for years and years and years is the relationship where each person has outside interests and maintains some sense of autonomy, because they bring that back to the relationship, and it enriches the relationship as well as enriching them. Lifelong learning. If you stop learning when you're 25 and you get out of college, you're just going to stultify, and nobody's going to be interested in you, at least of all your partner. So I work with people on sort of reestablishing an R factor. Get some sense of privacy again. Create some mystery. Put some barriers in the way. Don't always be available for sex, for instance. Wear something to bed that's sexy but that covers up some part of you. Don't walk around the house naked with your stomach hanging out 24 hours a day. Something, anything, to begin to get that sense again of mystery.
I remember a study done at Stanford University, probably 30 years ago now, and they looked at, 200 couples who had been married at least 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and by self-report were happy.
Yes, so I remember that study.
I love studies where they look at, well, what's going right here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So as it turned out, all of these couples, what they had in common was just many of the things that you were talking about, that they had some separate interests, some separate friends, a degree of autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And what's necessary with something like that, where you have, like the prophet said, let there be spaces in your togetherness, you need to have mm-hmm. trust.
Yeah.
And you admire the other person's unique characteristics.
Yeah.
That the person is really a whole, enthusiastic, loving person. And I think that when you have one whole person and another whole person, at times they can be three, not two, because they're synergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two
and
people
energy.
And energy. Yeah, and unfortunately, what a lot of us buy into, particularly women, is the romance model of sex, which says mm-hmm. someone else completes you.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. I know. We just both went, I know. You know, it's interesting you brought up that study, because my partner and I were part of that study.
Oh, I
yeah.
love it.
Yeah,
really?
We were part of that study, and it was a great study, and what I always remember about that study is they asked these couples what they found, what they felt was the most successful, the most important part of their relationship, what was the thing that kept it together. And overwhelmingly, the first thing everybody said wasn't good sex, although that was one of the top five, believe it or not. After 10 or 20 years, yeah, I mean, good sex was still part of it. But the thing that everybody said was, I like my partner as a person.
Right. I like my partner
yes.
as a person.
And you see, the people who are in happy relationships, or at least, you know, moderately happy, are people who still enjoy spending time together after 20 years. They have something to say to each other.
Mm.
They're at the restaurant talking rather than just sitting there eating their food. And they want to be together because they like each other. And what a gift that is, huh? To really like somebody that much that after 30 years you're still fascinated with them.
That there is still that fascination.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I want to tie this in with this because a lot of people ask about, am I normal? It's the
mm-hmm.
most common.
Oh, yeah.
It's the most common question, almost.
Yeah, it's the most common sexual concern. Everybody says that. That's the first thing.
Yeah, so I think that being normal is actually extraordinary. It's all about being unusually likable, but less neurotic people are often more easygoing, but they're also the neurotic people are usually a little more adventuresome, and they may be fascinating human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That
we need a little craziness and a little eccentricity. Otherwise, we're boring as hell, aren't we?
We're boring as hell.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people sometimes like to bring in a little kinky sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I think any kinky sex, any unusual sexual practice is likely to be okay, harmless even, unless it's the only thing that turns you on.
Yeah, and we were talking about that earlier. I always say to people, if it's the only thing that turns you on, is that okay with you? And if it is, then that's fine. What you sometimes find is somebody who grows up and likes the color green and likes a steak and pizza, and that's all they like, right? I wear green all the time because I look good in it. I only like steak and I only like pizza. Well, if that's fine for you, then... You know, there's no disease called pizza whatever. You know, I mean, you like pizza, you like pizza. But if you find it too narrow, and if you begin to get bored with it, or if you find that you want to branch out and try some sushi or whatever, then that's fine too.
If you find the ice box is filled with green steak pizza because you forgot about it for 3 weeks, don't eat it.
Right. Yeah, or if your friends are getting really bored going out to dinner with you, right? Because all you want is pizza. There's nothing inherently harmful about, for instance, being turned on only by women wearing high-heeled red leather pumps, if that's what turns you on. And as long as you find partners who are willing to wear red high-heeled leather pumps, then bravo. But if you say to me, you know, I'm kind of bored. I'd like to branch out. That's a whole different issue, isn't it?
I think it is, and I think also responding to a wider repertoire of sexual situations, you know, say some especially men get really tied into porn, and they kind of imagine that sex should be like this.
Should be like that, right?
And so, but allowing in variety and keeping a sense of exploration is good, because otherwise, sex can become very selfish.
Yeah, well, and it also can become really boring. I mean, you know, if we kiss each other for 2 minutes, then he touches my breast for 2 minutes, then he goes down on me for 3 minutes, and then we have penis-vagina sex for 5 minutes, and then we turn over and go to sleep. And we've been doing that for 20 years, and
I
get off, but, you know, I'm bored, right? And people get into these patterns. You know, when I work with couples, and I find that after about the first year together, they establish a pattern of how they have sex, and they never talk with each other about it. They don't negotiate it. They don't say, you want to try this or that or the other thing. They each think they know what the other person likes best, so they develop this nonverbal commitment to this pattern, and they never vary it from then on, and 10 years later, they're bored to death.
Of course.
Yeah. And so the first thing I say to them is, you know, did it ever occur to you to talk about, after you have sex, the same way that you talk after you saw a great movie or had a great meal? We process things with our partner, experiences. We say, oh, didn't you love it when, you know, Harrison Ford did blah, blah, blah? Or how did you like oh, isn't this dessert good? Yum. Would you like to try some? And during sex, we're completely mum, and then we turn over and go to sleep instead of talking about it.
And it's so much fun to talk about.
Oh, yeah, it's very hot.
And or maybe cuddle in a little bit while you're doing that.
Didn't you love it when Harrison Ford had sex with a green steak pizza?
Check, please.
I wanted to make this observation that substituting a behavior for a partner, say, with a little bit of kink. A little bit of kink can certainly spur open-mindedness and a spirit of adventure. But when an object or a ritual becomes more important than the living, breathing partner, it gets in the way of, I think, real relational relationship sexual fulfillment.
Yeah, I mean, but it depends on the person. There are some people who don't want relationships. I have a very dear friend who I've had for 30 years who is single and wants to stay that way. She loves having sex with partners, but she's not really interested in being in a relationship. She's very much her own person, and she doesn't deal well with her routines being disrupted. She enjoys being sexual, and she's very well-rounded, and she's definitely the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
So I take my cue from what people tell me, not what they think they should feel, but what they do feel. So if somebody were to come to me and say, yeah, you know, I'm turned on by an object, but my life doesn't feel fulfilled, I want to be in a relationship, that's fine. But if they say, I'm turned on by an object, am I okay? then I got to explore with them. Well, what does that mean to you? And do you feel unfulfilled? Or is it just that you're getting the message that you couldn't possibly be okay as a single person, for instance? So it's, we got to explore with people, because so much of what people think about themselves in terms of this normality issue is what they see on TV or hear that they should be. And everybody thinks that there is some magical should, don't they?
Do you know that the two words, great sex, are in, currently in about, well, the last few years, in about 150 book titles?
I believe it, yeah.
So, you know, yeah. The magic thing, this technique or that,
yeah, I call
whatever.
It the strawberries and whipped cream book, right?
I like that.
Cover each other in strawberries.
How about the Disillusioned
Bastard's
Guide to Lousy Sex?
Yeah.
Now, there'd be a bestseller.
Yeah, well, that's also called the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
Greed sucks.
And not in a good way.
But people are reaching out for some things. I mean, I don't peruse Craigslist, but I've heard that, you know, you've got the married lover on Craigslist looking for a she-male.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this would be a man who, well, a woman who's kept her penis, the transgender,
right,
hasn't done the
breasts.
Full.
Yes.
So that's the she-male, but has the breasts, has the makeup.
Yes.
Or you've got a young professional woman just yearning to be spanked.
Yeah.
I mean, looking for, you know, something else.
Mm-hmm. Something else, right. Yeah, and what we have to help people decide, well, what does that mean for you? You know, what does spanking mean for you? Is it is it a positive thing for you, or is it a negative? Are you trying to heal something from your childhood?
Maybe.
And if so, what? And what does that mean? I always take my cue from what it means to the person, not what it means to me, because I don't care. I mean, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't mean anything to me. But what does it mean to you? Yeah, and where do you want to go with it? Are you feeling happy, or are you feeling sad about it?
Well, just that question alone makes you a great therapist, because that's so important.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And a lot of times I find that people just need to be told that they're okay, that they don't fit into a box, but there is no such thing as a box anyway. That for them, but they're trying to shoehorn themselves into this thing that isn't them, this concept of, quote, normality. And there is no such thing. I always say to people, they say, well, Dr. J, is this normal? I say, it's normal for you.
Perfect. Perfect answer.
And what's normal for you is, you know, not normal for me. So you may think about sex, you know, once every 20 minutes, and I may think about it once every 20 days. And either way is okay. Neither one of us has anything wrong with us. You know?
I like your answer, because when people ask, am I normal?
Mm-hmm.
I usually dismiss the question a little bit, and I'm going to take my cue from you. I'll say it's really hard to define normal, because there's such a huge range.
Yes.
So most therapists in general, because it isn't just sex therapists, psychotherapists in general, don't really like that question.
Yeah, and we just.
But
say,
I like the way you deal with it better.
Yeah, what's normal for you is what's normal, as long as it feels okay. If it doesn't, then let's work with that. Yeah.
Am I normal?
If you're, you know, so much that you're gaining a lot of weight and you're not happy about it, then obviously you want to work on that. But there's nothing wrong with you. You're not abnormal.
On the other side of the normal, you do get some people that are proud to be twisted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the singer Marilyn Manson with the one.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think he lies awake at night. When, you know, wishing he were more normal.
No.
What, Bill?
Damn, I'm not normal. Yeah.
And, of course, feelings or habits that are out of the ordinary are great fodder for art and entertainment.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the point could be made, and I've said this before, that there's a lot of great artists who never would have created their art if they weren't tortured.
That's right.
I mean, mediocrity is, we create a lot of mediocrity when we're happy, because, you know, It's like, oh, isn't that nice? You knitted a doily. How nice. But, you know.
Oh, look, I mean, you knitted your lover's face.
The difference between John Lennon and Tiny Tim or someone. You know, great art comes from suffering, from looking inside your soul and looking at the dark stuff.
Looking at the dark stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill, have you ever done that?
Well, yeah, I was listening to a Tiny Tim record, and then I wrote the Fifth Symphony, so I guess great art does come from suffering. Did I tell you my name is Beethoven, and I felt immortal as soon as I saw that bastard? But that's just me. Am I normal? Sure, you got opposable thumbs, and you haven't been sentenced to death. You're in the range.
Yeah. Well, I would love, if any, Bill, maybe you could give the phone number again. We still have...
That's 1-888.
Yeah.
874-4888. Dr. Janice F. wants to know if you're normal. If you're the first normal caller, you win a conversation. How about that?
That's good. Would you also please give her website, Blogspot?
I certainly will. Dr. J-S-S-E-X-F-A-C-T-S at blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's D-R-J-S-S-E-X-F-A-C-T-S at blogspot.com. There's a ribbon in there. Does that make me
there
normal?
There is. You're not normal. Oh, you for too many years.
You mean that sex with the gecko and the buttered leather elephant and a trapeze is not within the range? Neither was convicted.
And then the other place where you, if you don't want to call in today, dear listeners, this evening, Eastern time, it's evening, then you can go to MedHelp.org. And Janice Epp, Dr. Janice Epp, E as an elephant, P as in Peter, P as in Peter, the spelling of her last name. She can answer your questions on that particular website.
Yep, sure can.
What's one of the more unusual, other than why is my penis, that was your class. What's an unusual question that you can recall?
Oh, gosh.
Why does my wife have a 6-inch clitoris? Well, let's check your sexuality.
Unusual ones would be people who, the people who have no information at all. But I also get a lot of people who are worried that I get a lot of people who are worried about self-pleasuring. They're convinced that this is going to make their penis fall off or that they're never going to want to have sex with anybody else. And that's a just overwhelming concern by a lot of people.
If they self-pleasure with a food processor, their penis may fall off.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah,
but
that's a very bad image,
Bill. Yeah, so yeah.
But also, I think along those same lines, I certainly hear from women who really need the sex toy to reach orgasm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But they worry that will I not be able to reach orgasm with a partner, mm-hmm. with hand stimulation of my clitoris? Will I get numb to it?
Right.
And usually in my experience, and I want to hear what yours is, of course, in my experience, usually taking a little bit of a vibrator fast.
Mm-hmm.
Go off of it for a bit.
Right. Well, yeah, I always tell people experiment. But the main thing is, and vibrators are great, and I'm happy that women are having orgasms anyway.
Absolutely, and she's not broken just because she needs to have a vibrator.
Usually if a woman may need more stimulation, but also vibrators can overcome negative thoughts. Because they provide such impactful stimulation that even if you're uncomfortable with what you're doing, the vibrator is so strong that you can have an orgasm. But I find that for a lot of women, they have negative thoughts and they can't short-circuit them. And so what I suggest women do is create a really, really, really hot fantasy.
And for women I love that idea. For women that have a little trouble jump-starting the hot fantasy, I think there are some wonderful erotic books written with wonderful erotic writers. And so reading, you only need one hand for the vibrator and one hand to hold the book.
Or one hand for yourself. I mean, you can try being with yourself without a vibrator by just, getting yourself really turned on by a hot fantasy. And very often that just short circuits all that negative buzz that's going on in your head.
I think that's brilliant. I had never really thought about that before, but it does.
Yeah, it's a great tool.
And then along with that, setting the scene, being relaxed, maybe taking a bath first, or a shower, and putting the candles around, all the usual stuff, setting the scene, having a glass of wine, being relaxed. When we're having partner sex, if you can get your partner to massage you and you reverse the favor, most people have much better sex when they're relaxed.
I try to get a picture of what the person looks like when they're having sex in terms of what's going on in the room, you know, and what's the environment like and what's your body like doing and so on. And sometimes if I get somebody to get really detailed with me, I'm seeing them, you know, there's a pile of dirty laundry, the kid's crib is there, the computer's on, and there's a giant picture of their parents over the bed. And they're wondering why they're not getting turned on, you know, why they can't let go of these negative thoughts.
Whenever I don't want to have sex, I fantasize on Richard Nixon and Pat just going at it.
Yeah, that, there you go.
That'll stop me like that.
Right, that'll do it.
Feel my jowls, baby. No, that's, I don't know, for some reason that just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. No.
Okay. Was it bad for me, too?
Yeah, was it bad for you, too?
Oh, Dick, come on, suck my nickname, Pat. I don't know, just to... Well, I am not a cock. Wait, I got to stop now. Okay.
Yes, yes. Well, Billy is the laughter part of lust, lust and love, lust and laughter. Janice, will you come back for part two sometime down the line?
Sure, especially if Phil agrees to get rid of the rest of that Halloween candy.
Okay. Maybe I'm on a sugar buzz.
I think
I was incorrigible as a kid. Matter of fact, one of the first impressions I did was my sixth grade teacher saying, William, be quiet.
Uh-huh, there you go.
So it started early. I know it started early for Bill.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that Dr. Janice Epp has just been remarkably intelligent and knowledgeable and fun, just the kind of guest we like to have. So thank you so much. You know what, I have to tell you, we pulled her away from sitting in the sun in her bathing suit. So she's got a nice little cover up and she's over her bathing suit. But so she really sacrificed sitting in the sun to be here.
Oh, poor me. No, it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Would you like me to rub some lotion on your back through the telephone, my dear?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, for this we have pool boys.
Okay.
Yes. Did you notice any of them coming around?
No, but I have one of my own, so I'm fortunate.
Yes, you do, and he's adorable. I love Jim. You know, what we're so lucky because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Stays in Vegas, right, right. So whatever happens here and now stays here and now, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, this was fun. I enjoyed it, and I'd love to come back.
Good. And so we'll have other provocative things to talk about. And I'm sorry we didn't get any callers, but it's not that unusual, and I know many of you do listen after it's archived. And I have to confess, I hope Katie Fitzgerald is listening, our producer. I have been so busy that I'm like three or four shows behind, and I send descriptions of the shows. The dates are up there and but I need to write Joe, the archivist, descriptions, and I will do that when I get home from Vegas. So please pass that message along. I've been a little lax. Dr. Janice Epp, thank you so much for being with us. You've just, I think, made this a better radio program, and I'm going to encourage many of my clients to listen to this program.
Great. Well, it was lovely being with you. Nice to meet you, Bill. And
thank you very much.
My best wishes for great sex for everybody.
That's a good sign off. Great sex.
Till next time, keep it juicy, as we say in Hawaii and New York and Vegas. Till next time, for Wiley and Sage, we're all saying aloha.